You're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
4 seconds left.
Good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to RBLR Sports Lightning Podcast. We are coming to you live. I'm Joe Zamataro, joined with Matt Gannon, Michael Wax, and this episode we'll go over the latest Lightning news, recap the past three games, talk about our three stars of the week, and look at the road ahead, including tonight's game. But first, guys, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Joe. Glad you're back with us. It's been a hectic couple of weeks, going on a couple of months now, but glad to have you back. We're full swing into the season. We've got a good week of hockey to go back and cover instead of overanalyzing one game like me and Mike did last week. And speaking of Mike, thanks for joining us again, Michael. How are you?
You're welcome. I'm glad to be back here filling in for Jake once again. Need to get him to stop slacking off, but you know. I'm glad that you're back, Joe. We did miss you last week, and it's nice that we actually have some things to talk about, not just training camp rosters and one regular season game.
With all the stress that's been happening to everybody in the Tampa Bay area, it is really nice to be able to put on a Lightning game and escape reality for a little bit. I'm looking forward to being on with you guys. I only got my electricity back, a few hours, I think, before our podcast last week, and unfortunately, my internet didn't join in with it. So it's definitely good to be able to stabilize some things. Jumping right into the news, let's talk about some of the things that we've seen new that's happened in the past couple of weeks here with the Lightning, and let's go with something physical. We talked about before that the Lightning have a new video board right outside the arena. According to the press release, we talked about it a little bit before previewing it. It's a $6.5 million digital video wall, which is the largest in Florida, calling it a high-tech addition that boasts cutting-edge LED lights and 3D capabilities to ensure a stunning visual experience both before and after the games. I've driven by it. I've seen it, passing while in a car. But, some of the pictures look pretty stunning from what fans have captured, like on their Instagram pages and, of course, the promotional videos that the Lightning have put out.
Yeah, if it's half as cool as some of the promos they've put out, it'll be a great addition to Amalie Arena. I've seen some of the pictures of it, from 275 there, and it is imposing for sure. I wouldn't call it a hazard quite yet, but it's a big, big screen. It might be a little distracting on a drive, but hopefully it is as advertised. I can't wait to see it myself whenever I get to get out to one of the Lightning games sometime here in the near future, I hope. But again, if it's half as cool and 3D as they advertised, I think we're in for a nice addition to Amalie Arena.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't live in Florida right now, so I can't see it for myself in person, but it looks really cool from everything that I've seen online. Looks awesome. Glad the Lightning video digital media team has something new to play with as well. I think that'll be a really fun adventure for them. And I made this joke during our season preview over on the Bolt Report, but I can just imagine myself moving back home or being home for a little bit, driving down 275, and all of a sudden I see Andre Vasilevsky's glove coming at me and just, try not to panic in that corner of my eye that I see. But I'm really happy that the Lightning are trying something new, trying something different. It really does enhance the outside space, which has always looked nice, but, at times has gotten a little stale.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. And one thing that, I've absolutely loved about Vinnick is he's not been shy to reinvest his money into the Lightning, into the area. I mean, all the improvements he's done over the years and continues to do to the building, to Amalie Arena itself, has been great from a fan experience standpoint. I mean, whether it's upgrading the audio for a better concert experience or even just the outside when you're in Thunder Alley by having new visuals, they've done a really great job with, like you said, Mike, keeping it from going stale, which is, you know, it's a hard thing to do when, you know, we're in a 60-second news cycle, it feels like, for everything else that we got going on in the world. Speaking of other news, though, Bally Sports is being rebranded. And, man, I almost am remiss that we don't have Jake on because, you know, this is one of his biggest pet peeves is having to rely on Bally Sports to watch his Lightning. And now they're getting rebranded and details are still kind of coming out as to exactly how this is being structured. Do you guys have any insight on this?
Praise the Lord. Not really any insight or anything. I know it's, you know, just really a rebrand. I might be getting a little overexcited. It'll be, I'm sure, you know, the same, you know, it's going to be the same app, same channel number and everything. It's literally just a rebrand. I'm hoping for some small changes because it's a lot of the small stuff that, you know, Jake, myself, you, everybody, you know, bickers at, you know, whether it be just, you know, little tiny errors, like I think in game one or one of the games this year, it said second quarter. Like, come on, you got to be better than that. Like it was second period. It's just small stuff like that. So hopefully maybe there's new management or executives or just a little bit better, you know, just quality, just a tiny bit. I'm looking for some sort of improvement. And also, me and Mike were talking about this before the show. Move the score bug up top like every other network on earth. Golf is even like up top and not where the playing surface is. Like that is kind of my biggest gripe right now. So praise that Bally is gone, but it's not completely eradicated from our lives. It is just a rebrand at the end of the day, but hopefully it'll bring in some sort of change. I'm remaining optimistic about it. I guess we'll find out here, you know, in an hour or so what it really does look like.
Oh, is it fully in effect for this next
today's
game?
Today's the first day, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so one thing that I'm interested to see is, you know, we talk about it being a potential rebrand, but when we were fortunate enough to have Dave Randorf on the show, not at the Ball Report, but our prior stop with Jake and I, he had mentioned that when they went from Fox Sports to Bally Sports, nothing was going to change. It was just going to be him, the rest of the crew, which very thankfully they are moving on with FanDuel. They aren't, you know, we aren't getting a new broadcast team or anything like that. Everybody's staying. But he was like, listen, the only thing that changes is the logo that's on my microphone. And so I wonder if it's going to be very similar to that, or if we're actually going to get some smaller type changes. I really hope we do, like Matt said. One, my biggest thing, because he already mentioned the score bug, is can we please focus on the play when the puck is in motion? I don't need to see camera cuts to people on the bench. I don't need to see camera cuts to goaltenders. I don't need to see camera cuts to the like the side angle where you can barely see anything that's happening. Just let me see what's going on.
I mean, that's a fair point. I think one thing you will see differently, though, is, you know, even though Bally's was a casino that basically owns the channel, with FanDuel, I wonder if we're going to get even more inundated with betting odds or certain statistics that revolve around gambling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I know a lot of people gambling's a touchy subject. A lot of people think it's the devil. A lot of people, you know, are addicted to it. I'm somewhere in between. I don't really mind, but if it, you know, encroaches a bit too far, I don't foresee it becoming an issue, but it'll probably gradually, you know, clench its claws in and throw a little bit more, you know, odds and lines in our faces. But I don't think it's going to be like a pressing issue or anything. I think, you know, with FanDuel maybe, you know, stepping out like this and, you know, into uncharted territory. I don't know if it's uncharted, but like I didn't expect FanDuel, like a betting app, to be in the broadcasting business, but hopefully they'll, you know, take it slow and be easy and just be a broadcaster for at least a little bit. Don't just start shoving it down our throats.
Well, a good point brought up here by Dan in our chat is make sure you update your app if you haven't already. I know that I watch it through Samsung TV, downloading the Bally app. So, man, it's a good point to make sure you get that updated before you go to stream the game tonight.
And one thing I noticed, too, sorry to cut you off, when I updated my app earlier this morning, it gave me access to Miami Marlins games now, too, which was kind of weird. I don't know if that was a glitch, but, like, I've never had...
that should be a glitch, right?
Sun in Florida, I know this goes back all the way to Fox. Sun in Florida will sometimes have each other's games.
Yeah?
So you might get a Marlins game, you might get a Heat game.
But they're not playing right now.
I don't know what to tell you about that. I think it's just, you know, them trying new stuff out.
Maybe.
What I will say about the Lightning's broadcast, and again, I don't know if it's going to carry over into the FanDuel Sports Network era, but when they were Bally, I thought they did a pretty good job of keeping the gambling aspect away from the on-ice product. You saw a lot of different Bally broadcast, whether it was like the Milwaukee Brewers is a team, for example. LA was a team that I saw recently, the Kings, where they had a like same game parlay on the screen. I don't think the Lightning ever did that. I really hope they continue to not do that, but they do a really good job of keeping it very professional and keeping what's on the ice the main central focus.
Yeah, a couple of things on there, you know, wouldn't bother me too much personally. I'm not a gambler. I don't really like it personally. It doesn't do anything for me, but I'm not against those that are. The upside to it I could see is interesting more people in the sport by giving them another opportunity to enjoy it, you know, differently. So, you know, if there's somebody new that's trying it out, maybe the gambling side of it will add that little bit of excitement to them to turn them into fans. But then again, I also think how many people are going to be gambling on hockey if they're not already fans? I don't think it's like the craze that came from fantasy football, for instance, that completely thrust that transformed it into America's new pastime, right? But with you know, having some odds isn't always a bad thing too, because it gives you a little bit of an idea also on what other teams are expected to do performance wise because I can't keep track of all of the teams in the NHL, and to see odds real time does give you a little bit of insight into, you know, what to expect out of them for that particular game.
Now, that's a real good way to put it, especially what you said before before that, talking about how, you know, you might interest some new fans. You know, there's always people looking to, you know, make some money on something they don't know about. I have friends that could care less about hockey, and every now and again, you know, they'll just throw down an eight-leg parlay or something like that, and they'll ask me, and I always give them terrible information, it seems. That's why I don't do any of the betting myself, but... even people I know that just could care less about hockey. Yeah, again, like I'll tell them, hey, bet on this guy, this guy, this guy. And again, sometimes it just doesn't work, but it could potentially bring in some more fans, even if it might be for the wrong reasons. It's still new fans, new eyes on the Lightning, on the NHL. I'll never be opposed to that.
Well, new fans, new eyes on. I mean, it's a whole new rebranded app too. So let's see where it goes. You know, speaking of branding, I think it's time right now to bring up shop.rblrsports.com. Of course, my segues are not going to ever be as slick as the professional that is Jake, but join us on shop.rblrsports for all Tampa team-inspired merchandise. And use code BOLTS for 10% off of your order. That is shop.rblrsports.com. All right, let's get into the games that we've had for the past week here. I'm so glad that I get to be talking about this again. It feels like it's been forever. We thoroughly milked every topic that we could throughout the off season here, so it's great to get into some Lightning hockey. First up, we had the Vancouver Canucks playing against the Tampa Bay Lightning. That was their new home opener, which was on Tuesday. The Lightning win 4-1. And quite a great showing for the Lightning. Just want to start off with you, Michael. What were your thoughts on this game?
I thought they did a phenomenal job, specifically at 5-on-5. I thought the Lightning really controlled play. They really made it difficult on the Canucks. their first period was, you know, okay. Their second period was a little bit worse, but they really clamped it down in the third, which is something that when you think about the Cup teams, which is already turning to half a decade now, I don't know where that's gone, but I don't like the fact that
you guys are getting older.
Yeah, yeah. But you think about the Cup teams, and their main thing was, all right, we're in the third period, we're just going to shut the game down. And I really like what I saw early on. I think that, and he isn't one of our three stars, so I'm just going to shout him out right now. Ryan McDonagh has been an excellent addition to the Tampa Bay Lightning, or re-addition to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it's nice to see that while he hasn't necessarily done the goal scoring that we would have liked to see, Jake Guentzel is putting up points. He is meshing into that line even better than I think we would have imagined early on.
Let's talk about that a little bit. You mentioned how good our 5-on-5 play has been, which was one of the weak points for sure last season when the Lightning really relied extremely heavily on their power play to be able to defeat teams. 5-on-5 play has looked pretty good, and that top line, Eddie Guentzel has been almost, I don't know if I want to say a seamless transition to be able to play with Point and Kucherov, but he definitely doesn't look out of place. And every single game that goes by, they're starting to look better together.
And he's responsible too. Like, I don't know, like I wouldn't call him like a defensive forward guru or anything like that, but it seems like he's always, even being a winger, kind of the first guy back, like beating Point if there's like a loose puck and he has to go support a defenseman or something. Late in the game too, like he was out there, you know, securing the win for the guys. Of course, you know, Cooper's going to want to put out his top line out there so Kucherov can cherry pick some more empty nets. But even before that, Guentzel, like he was doing a good job of limiting chances on his own net and, you know, keeping guys out of the zone. Again, not like a defensive guru. He's not a Patrice Bergeron or anything like that, but and I hate to have to use him as a comparison because it is unfair, but you would hardly ever get that from Steven Stamkos. Kind of cherry picking, you know, two different types of players here, but Stamkos was pretty far from a responsible back checking forward. And I don't mean to, you know, kick him while he's down. I'm just kind of elated that Jake Guentzel, you used the word, is fitting in seamlessly. And he's putting up points. He got a real nice saucer pass assist to Kucherov, and he finally got on the goal scoring sheet in the Ottawa game, which was a loss, unfortunately. But he's fitting in real nicely, and also no slouch to the second line, too. They haven't had a lot of the points that the first line had. Not many lines in the NHL will, but the second line, which was kind of the biggest question mark coming into this season, has done a really nice job of maintaining pressure, getting chances all in the offensive zone while being still responsible defensively. It's hard to be irresponsible defensively when you have Hagel and Cirelli on the same line, and then Nick Paul as well, who's no slouch despite his rough numbers last year. They've been a force to be reckoned with as well. I don't think a lot of people are giving that second line a lot of credit because obviously that first line is world beaters right now. So they're taking a lot of the spotlight away, but the 5-on-5 play from the forwards, limited to the forwards, has been really, really nice so far, especially in this Vancouver game. I think it was the best game the team has played all year so far.
Well, I mean, it is a relatively small sample size, but I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with you. The ability for Cirelli and Hagel to find each other, and then they've just been a great tandem, and then playing on the penalty kill with each other has been they're really starting to develop a chemistry where, you know, I was extremely critical of Cirelli last season. I'm really hoping this is a breakout year for him to earn some of those dollars that, you know, he's hitting against that the cap that we have to play with here. Let's move on to the second game, which was, man, this was an exciting one against the Golden Knights. This was a game that saw a lot of scoring going back and forth where Kucherov had his second goal of the game with only 55 seconds left in order to put the Lightning ahead. To be honest, I wasn't even watching when this happened. I had to watch it in a replay because I was out somewhere. I only got to watch the first period. So to see that update, you know, knowing that we were down by two and then all of a sudden we won the game, I almost made a scene of myself in an environment that would not have been appropriate.
It's always appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, in another notable part of this game is Moser scoring as a defenseman as well, you know, being able to use some speed. And we've started to see some flashes of what he's capable of, using speed and size in order to get a little bit of a clearing on a breakaway to score a goal. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Moser for sure.
He has thoroughly impressed me so far, as we'll find out later in the episode. He's another guy that is, you know, fitting right in seamlessly. And boy, does he have a cannon of a shot, too. It wasn't in this game, but in the Ottawa game where he really, really did, you know, unload like how heavy he can shoot the puck despite being, you know, a bit of a smaller guy. This game was a bit of a roller coaster of emotions. It wasn't, you know, the craziest game I've ever seen, but you were playing catch up for the entire game, and there were some defensive lapses. It wasn't a perfect game by the Lightning by any stretch, but at the end of the day, at the end of the game, you tie it up with, you know, hardly any time left, and then you win the game with virtually no time left. 55 seconds is still a good bit, but from what some would call a fluky play, Kucherov just in the left corner, just throwing the puck on net, and it gets deflected off, I can't remember who the Vegas defenseman was, and it goes in for the game-winning goal. You know, you get the puck on net, good things happen most of the time, and that was a really good thing. But again,
before transitioning, I want a quick request from Eureka, because I saw this stat. Kucherov has done this three times to give the Lightning a go-ahead goal in the final minute of play. And I believe that puts him on the list third for the most go-ahead goals in under a minute of play, where the other ones, the other two players, I think, have five and four goals like that. But just to show you, you know, what Kucherov is capable of doing, that's incredible to win a game, and so deflating. And then he did that in the playoffs a few years ago.
Game two against the Islanders. Mike, I rambled on long enough. It looked like you wanted to get some words in.
Yeah, just I really, really like JJ Moser. Like, when was the last time we could say, and I know he's a left-hand defenseman, but when was the last time we could say that Victor Hedman had a good defensive partner? Like, it's been
a
probably
while.
Jan Ruda.
It was Ruda.
It was probably Jan Ruda. But Moser is, he really does feel like he's making all the right plays. If you look at his 3 points, two of them came on really nice outlet passes to start off the play. So that being the tying goal from Hagel and then the go-ahead goal from Kucherov. Secondary assist didn't always mean anything. In the Kucherov goal, I don't really think it meant anything. That was more so a case of Kucherov just doing his thing. But the tying goal, he really set up that play, getting the puck to Chafee, who gave it to Hagel on the other side, and Hagel ripped it home. And then the goal, I mean, that was pretty irresponsible, but it worked out in the end. Like, you don't normally see defensemen going on a breakaway, but really happy with how he's performed so far. Defensively, he has covered up for a lot because Hedman has to do so much. His defense can take a bit of a backseat sometimes. And Moser has been, certainly since Ruda, the best defensive defenseman that the Lightning have had with Hedman.
I'm not sure if those two are going to stay together. We know John Cooper loves to blend the lines together, especially if the defense starts to fail a little bit, as we saw in the Ottawa game, at least in my opinion. I don't know if we're going to see it stay. Moser's a lefty, right? They're both lefties on that line.
And I'll say this much. I hope they don't stay together, because we saw in that Ottawa game, and we're probably going to see throughout the season, that third pair needs a lot of work. Whether it's Lilleberg, whether it's Darren Radish, whether it's Nick Perbix, they have been on the ice, I want to say, for like 60% of the goals. It's not been pretty.
Well, before we transition over to the Ottawa game, for Moser, he was 1 goal, 2 assists, a +3 for the Golden Knights, which I think is absolutely fantastic stats. And a comment from Dan here, Moser seems to have better skill than Ruda ever did. Jan was a Schuster light.
That's a stretch.
Usually agree with what Dan has to say, but Schuster, I think, was a Schuster light. And some love heading Matt's way from one of his buddies. Yeah.
Thanks, Ethan. I've been here the whole time.
So let's move on now to the Ottawa game, the hardest of all to talk about because it was the first loss of the season. It was a tough game from the start and certainly very tough in the third to watch as the Lightning had something creep into their game that we were praying wouldn't ever happen again, which was a shorthanded goal, which was the game-winning goal for the Sens. In recent years, the Senators have given the Lightning a lot more trouble than the overall record that the Senators have had on the season would suggest that they would be able to do. And, you know, having Joseph on the team, you know, biting the Lightning always hurt in the past. That wasn't an issue in this past game, but Brady Tkachuk getting on the scoreboard is always going to bug the hell out of me because that's just one of those goons that, you know, he's a tough, hard-nosed forward. But I just, you know, love to hate him. He's one of those guys I love to hate. He's not on the same level as like a Brad Marchand that's like a rat, scummy sort of guy.
And what about some of his antics? Talented as Brad Marchand, so
I shouldn't say it, but I've actually kind of grown to like Matthew Tkachuk a little bit.
I'm the opposite. I love Brady Tkachuk. I think he's a heck of a player. It sucks because he does torch the Lightning every time he plays them, but I don't know. To me, I much prefer him over Matthew. He's somebody who can actually back up his words and will fight and will lead instead of, you know, slash you in the back of the ankles and just kind of run away back to the bench. I don't know. Not that I'm saying Matthew's a coward or anything, but I think when you're comparing the two brothers, I think Brady is a put up or shut up kind of guy. And Matthew, he's probably a better, more skilled player than Brady Tkachuk, but I think Brady just brings a lot more of the physical element. And that's what I'm a bigger fan of.
Sure. I guess. There's no wrong answers here with this.
Well, and then you've got Tim Stützle, who loves to just dive all over the place. Can't stay on his skates. That was the part that really infuriated me, where I was just like, bro, stay on your skates. Like,
oh, yeah.
He caused, I think, one or two penalties the Lightning had in this game. And I was like, no, I refuse. Like, maybe that's the homerism in me. I refuse to believe that's a penalty. You have a reputation in this league. Like, get out.
And there was one that went uncalled. Like, it was like a cross check that he just completely flopped himself on the ice for, and you know the whole crowd, it was an obvious flop. And a lot of the fans, the aftermath of this game, a lot of the Lightning fans were saying that the refs were brutal this game, and I agree to an extent, but I also agree with that the Lightning got away with a couple of penalties too. So I'm not going to chalk it up to special teams was the reason this game was lost. Ottawa did really look like they wanted this game a lot more. I think they controlled play a lot more than the Lightning did. They did get a couple of, you know, not lucky goals, but just took advantage of some defensive breakdowns. And yeah, the power play was in favor of the Ottawa Senators. They've had a pretty good power play so far this year. But yeah, the game didn't get out of hand, but you could tell like there was an air or something in the air with this game. Ottawa owns us from the start too,
right? It's almost like the Lightning didn't start the game on time. They got a penalty
on a Sunday.
They got a penalty 30 seconds into the game. Another 39 seconds later to put the Senators in a 5-3 advantage. And it's really hard to start building momentum when you're digging yourself out of a hole and it feels like the other team's got full control. And that's what I feel like, you know, the Lightning were trying to do for the entirety of this game was dig themselves out of the hole. They did come back in the second period and end up having, you know, pretty much the same number of shots on goal, but they had the two goals to tie it up. And it was just unfortunate that there's a series of bad plays defensively that allowed the Senators back up ahead.
Maybe the Lightning should never play over at the Canadian Tire Center again, because the little stat that I found doing the write-up, in 53 games, the Lightning are 17-31-0-5 against the Senators at the Canadian Tire Center.
Say it one more time.
17-31-0-5. The five are overtime losses, not ties. But this is the third worst among arenas where they played at 40 or more games. This is the third worst road arena ever.
Who's 2-1?
It's TD Garden, wherever the Capitals play, Capital One Arena, I think.
Yeah.
And Canadian Tire Center.
Wow.
These are the three worst. And keep in mind, Washington's been good for a long time. Maybe not so much recently, but they were good for a long time. Boston's been good forever. Senators? Not really. Like, this is, I don't understand why the Lightning have such a difficult time playing here.
And this is the worst the Sens team has been since like the 90s. Like, they were a good team in the early 2000s and, you know, into the 2010s. Like, they've had their up and downs, but I don't feel like they were ever really consistently bad like they are right now. And I'd say they're probably on the up and up. Like, they really need to be, or else this rebuild has completely failed. They need to take a step this year. But for whatever reason, they always do have our number at the Canadian Tire Center. And it's especially, like I was saying, it's especially these matinee games, specifically on a Sunday. I can recall back at least five of these games. They only happen once a year, and it's always against the Sens for some reason. I don't know if it gets planned that way, but it's always against the Sens in Ottawa, it seems, that these games make me want to pull my hair out, because it's tough losses. Like, it's not like, ooh, you know, could have got them next time. This loss was ugly, in my opinion, despite it being, you know, only a one goal loss, but it's still 5-4. You know, I thought Vasilevsky was playing really good up until this game. Not saying that he was the reason we lost. Defense left and hung him out to dry, it seemed, for a lot of these chances. There were a couple partial breakaways that didn't even turn into a scoring chance because of JJ Moser, it seemed. He was breaking up a lot of them, but it seemed like Victor Hedman and Darren Radish and Nick Perbix, who made a really good play later in the game, were just letting the Ottawa forwards just skate all over them, couldn't control their gaps or anything. They just really had no idea how to measure the Ottawa forwards' speed and how to intercept a pass. There were a lot of issues on the defense in this game. Hopefully, they don't reside. This is the first time they've been glaring all season. It's been four whole games, but still, it's the first time that I've really had to say, man, the defense let us down this game. They let us down this game. That's all I can really say.
Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of plays, too, that the Lightning didn't capitalize on. Kucherov had a one-timer at some point that he shot it back across the grain instead of putting it in the short side. That would have been a really nice one to have. He did score on a one-timer as well, which now that makes him four consecutive games with a goal. But, you know, if he has that other one, you know, like that could have been a difference there. There's a series where there's like three crossbars hit all at the same time as well.
Oh, yeah.
That the Lightning just weren't able to finish things off. So, I mean, it was a hockey game, right? It could have gone a game of inches, and it could have gone either way, but it was something that the Lightning have. You can see that they have enough firepower to be able to come back in games. You know, we saw that again with the Vegas game, where last season the difference I always felt was if they were down, they were out. It was really hard for them to earn those goals, especially 5-on-5. And obviously they have some work to do on the power play. And that's something that, you know, we should probably discuss, because on this power on this game, they were 0-for-3. They scored one power play goal against the Vegas Golden Knights, and then they had one against the Vancouver Canucks as well. But it's obviously a very, very different look of this power play compared to the years where we had Stamkos as that big one-timer scoring threat, because he was so accurate with his shot.
It has looked pretty rough so far, and I hate to go back into my October 2023 tendencies and, you know, point fingers, especially at Darren Radish, but I don't know if he's going to be a viable option for the left circle one-timer option. Like, it's going to be extremely hard to replace Stamkos, and it seems like that's where John Cooper, Jeff Halpern, I think he's the power play coach, isn't he? Yes. Seems to, you know, have him try to mimic that Stamkos shot from a little further out. You know, he's not as close to the net as Stamkos was, but he could score from anywhere. Darren Radish couldn't hit the net. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn at all yesterday, and I've noticed that in some of the other games too. Like, yeah, he does have
He
has a really good wrist shot, but his slap shot, his one-timer is I'll leave it specifically at his one-timer. It's either right in the goalie's chest or 4 feet wide of the net. I didn't see any redeeming qualities from his one-timer chances at all throughout any of these games. The rest of the power play, it might be able to get figured out in time. Darren Radish might be able to do some shooting drills or something like that, but I don't think he'll be a viable option. I think maybe he should look for maybe as counterproductive as it is to say this, look for an extra pass maybe instead of just trying to rifle it and just shooting it wide and the other team gets it out and clears it.
So it is going to take quite a while to develop that, because as a defenseman, you don't get that many opportunities to fire a one-timer, especially as low as the top of the circles where he's been hanging out. It's a different feel when you're that low to have a full sense of your orientation to the net. That might be something that he can develop. Will it ever be as accurate as Stamkos? No. Stamkos was one of the best all time at doing it, but I think it might actually serve another purpose as well. And that's just the fact that he can bomb these pucks and they're hard, and it's going to make people think twice before wanting to step in front of them. We used to have somebody on the Lightning probably 15 years ago now. His name was Curtis Foster, and he stood at the, you know, the top of the power play, kind of where Hedman is, and he'd be fed one-timers and he'd bomb them, and he probably broke, you know, 8 panes of glass throughout the season just on shooting one-timers, missing the net and breaking the glass behind the net. And he broke countless panes of glass at TGH Iceplex where they practice. He just hit it so hard. And that makes you think twice when you're stepping in front of some of those shots, because it freaking hurts. So instead of trying to block it the way you normally would, you might grimace, you might close your eyes, you might, you know, contract your muscles really hard to try to absorb a little bit more of it if it hits you. And in the process, you're getting yourself a little bit further out of position. You're doing a little bit less efficient of a job. And maybe that's just kind of the game plan for right now. It's just have them hit it absolutely as hard as they can, rely on their guys down low to generate traffic, screen tip rebound, and go from there, because that is a psychological weapon as well when you got somebody that can hit it that hard down the ice.
Mike, I'll let you go in a sec, but I don't think that's where they should really, you know, focus their energy on. If the power play stays, you know, pretty anemic as it was, like the Ottawa game, it was poor. It was really embarrassing to watch that power play. I wasn't a fan of any of their chances at all. They were just pretty weak. But what they need to figure out is how to properly utilize Guentzel on the power play, which he's coming into, you know, a new system where his job has pretty much been taken, but there isn't a job available for him. He was always the bumper guy in Pittsburgh. He was the bumper guy in Carolina for the brief stint there. You're going to have to drag Braden Point kicking and screaming away from that spot. He's one of the best in the league at being, you know, between the hash marks and even closer into the goalie. So figuring out what he's going to do, if he wants to stay on the top line, if Cooper wants to keep him on the top power play unit, is figuring out maybe a better job, be the behind the net guy, or maybe just work on your passing and find a way to get it into the slot or over to Kucherov or something. Like, you know, Stamkos was actually pretty good at doing that. He was a great forehand passer, but not the backhand. So if you can find a way to maybe change Guentzel's job to something he's not used to, and maybe he's able to excel at that and keep Point in the bumper, it'd be difficult to, you know, transition Point away from the bumper slot and put Guentzel there.
Also,
I think they need to focus on.
I don't think you can, because of the way his shot would come off.
Guentzel?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Cooch feeding you the whole time.
You'd have to go cross body for the pass. It would be a little bit. I just don't know that it would work necessarily as well. I mean, when you have a right-handed shot and the puck's on the right side of the net, you know, it's coming straight to your stick as opposed to having to go across your body where it's a little bit easier to block. And he's no good for the one-timer on the left side being a left-handed shot as well. It you'd have to completely change the format of the power play that was so successful last year, and then base it around one new guy.
Well, they are doing that right now, because at least in today's practice, and I don't know how that's going to work in the game, but Brendan Hagel took over that Darren Radish spot. I think that says more about Darren Radish potentially being a scratch at some point than Hagel being the permanent replacement on power play one. But it goes back to, well, actually he shoots right. He shoots the opposite way of Steven Stamkos, so that cross creek pass doesn't work anymore. And so I think trial and error, I'm not necessarily ready to give up on the Darren Rash experiment right there, but it has not looked good at all. Especially when they can't win faceoffs to start the power plays. So they're spending so much time trying to break the seam at the blue line that they don't even get chances.
That's exactly
that's what really weird.
Their entries have started to improve as the season has gone on, but those were absolutely brutal to start the season where they couldn't win a faceoff and they couldn't gain entry into the zone.
That's really where the whole topic kind of starts. I don't know why I did kind of work in reverse order here, but yeah, it's the entries. It's, you know, Brian Engblom hammered that into my head years ago. It's always that first pass inside the blue line. Love him. But he says it every game, especially when it doesn't work. So, yeah, if they can really get the entries down and then start to cycle from there and maybe see what works, what doesn't work with this new-look power play. One thing that I have been a fan of on the power play and even 5-on-5, I've noticed this. Michael, I was talking about this last week when it was just you and I on the show. Kucherov is shooting more, and I know he was also doing that this same time last year for whatever reason. He was the goal scorer, and then just later in the year, he was pass. He's been looking for the back of the net, and it's been working very well. I want to say he currently leads the league in goals with 7.
Yep.
He's looking to shoot, and, you know, Joe might debate me on this, but he's got a fantastic one-timer, better than Ross Colton. I'll never live that down. And Ross Colton's also having a great year so far.
I'd say
too.
Not, they're going head to head for points. I will say that if we look at the stats, Ross Colton I think is second in scoring right now with 6 goals, and Cooch has 7. And not to talk derogatorily about our amazing Kucherov, but you know there might be more than one of those that are empty net goals.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you from Colorado, Joe? We don't need this. But I said this kind of jokingly, I think it was in the second game, and then he just kept scoring. 100 assists last year, 100 goals this year?
Why not?
I mean, let's see if we do the math here. What is 7 divided by 4 times 82? My calculator doesn't want to math that high right now. But I think that's probably a perfect time to move on to the sponsored by Kucherov 3 stars of the week. Starting off with our third star, we're going to go with our new defenseman that had such a great game, such a great week, really, and has been a great addition with JJ Moser as our third star of the week. Guys, we've talked about him already, but I just want to say one quick stat here. He was +5 over those really? 3 games. And the plus minus stat, it's overrated. It doesn't tell you enough context. Whatever. He's +5 on a new team in this past week, +6 overall. The guy's doing well for the Lightning.
We were so focused on Connor Geeky being the main piece to come back in the Sergachev trade. And we weren't even looking at the guy that we got back to replace Sergachev. Moser's been great so far. Matt mentioned this, and this might be the most impressive part of his week. In the Ottawa game, he broke up like 4 or 5 scoring chances just by himself. He was really good defensively, responsible once again, had that 3-point night against Vegas. You know, hopefully he breaks his point career high, which I believe is 31 or 35. It's one of the two. It's in the 30s for sure. And if he can hit 40, that's basically your Sergachev production from last year.
At a fraction of the price too. Like if he can put up relatively similar numbers to Sergachev, which I think he's completely capable of, if you know what we've seen from him this year, and what is he making? Like $3 million? It's really not much compared to Sergey's $8 million. And I hate to, you know, talk bad about Sergachev and how, oh, we replaced you with somebody $5 million cheaper. But let's be real. If he can and he doesn't take threaten Victor Hedman's job either. There's a clear, you know, hierarchy of defensemen here. If you're the number two guy and you're kind of the all around guy, whereas Victor Hedman, let's be real,
he's making 3.375 for 2 years.
So we don't have to make it a comparison between him and Sergachev, saying that he is better or worse of a deal. We know what Sergachev was worth to the organization to give him that contract, and to be able to move him out and find another defenseman that can fill that role, at least seemingly up to this point, and get the best prospect that the Lightning have had in recent memory. That's just showing a good job that JBB did. I don't think that's saying anything negative about Sergachev, who is starting off really hot out there in Utah as well. He's a great player. We just were able to open up some additional opportunities by having him go out in this trade.
And he needs to be a number one guy too. Like, going back to what I was saying about the hierarchy of defensemen, it's hard to, you know, have Sergachev and Hedman, who both play the same position, you know, not even the opposite hand. They're both lefties. It's hard to have two elite level defensemen, if I can call Sergei elite. He's right there. Having them that far down in the pecking order, he deserves to be a number one guy. So I think in due time, and even currently right now, this trade has the potential to be a very rare win-win trade, especially if J.J. Moser can just play well and fill in this gap, and if Connor Geeky can develop into whatever we think he can be. This might be, again, a very rare win-win trade for both sides. Because I want Sergei to do good. I don't want to lose the trade, but I want him to succeed in Utah. You know, I still cheer for a lot of our ex-players, and if he can do good, and if Moser can do good, if Geeky can do good, I think the whole world's happy.
And we also have a second-round pick that we have not cashed from that trade. So excited about that, too.
Well, all right. So for our third star of the week, again, we have J.J. Moser, who, by the way, is 24 years old. So he's still young and somebody that could be with the organization a really long time as he continues to develop. The second star of the week, also a new player to the team. We are going with Jake Guentzel, who had, again, a really great start to the season, just like the rest of your Bolts. He had one goal in that last game with Ottawa, but also has racked up a total of four assists, playing on an extremely talented top line that he seems to be fitting in really well. Again, plus minuses and everything, but so far for these first four games, he's a plus five and looking to be playing great with these guys.
Yeah, I got to stop talking about guys that are on our star list so early in the episodes, because I just kind of run out of things to say, but I'm sure I could go on and on. Jake Guentzel, yeah, he's fit in perfectly so far. I'd like to make it be known that he's on my fantasy team. I drafted him rather high, so I've got some high hopes for him this year, and he is fit in perfectly on the Lightning and on my team. I was over the moon about when we traded for him, signed him this offseason. I know it came at the cost of our captain, but in the long run, I guarantee you this will be the correct move. And revisionist history, hindsight is 2020. Stamkos not off to a hot start in Nashville.
Hey, but let's keep it classy. We'll just let the numbers speak for themselves.
All right, well, let's talk.
We don't need to compare. It's the same conversation we have with Sergachev.
Whatever. I'll leave it at that. And just like with Stamkos in Nashville, I guess I'm not going to leave it at that. There's going to be growing pains. You're going to have to learn who you're playing with. And Jake Guentzel is going to have to learn how to play with Braden Point, which is probably hard enough. And then Kucherov, which is probably extremely hard. It's either extremely easy or extremely hard. I'm not sure where it does lie. But this is a guy that's no stranger to playing with elite talent like Sidney Crosby and Sebastian Aho, who's, you know, kind of a couple rungs below her, but still, he's a guy that has lived his entire career on the top line, playing with fantastic players, and I think he will inevitably fit in even better than the small bit we've seen from him so far.
I did write down a note from one of the games, and that was that, from the Cooch 2-on-1 with him, these two will destroy any team on a 2-on-1. Guentzel can pass. Guentzel is going to be the guy that is always ready to pass it back and forth 17 times and put it into the back of an empty net. He just seems to be ready for everything that Kucherov's going to send him, and he finds Kucherov. So if those guys go on a 2-on-1, I think it's almost like a guaranteed goal, and I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, and you know, as you just said right there, making our opponents thinking every time that, you know, Kucherov is going to make that pass, Guentzel is going to be the one to shoot. I think that's sort of the misconception that we had with that line as a whole coming into the year, with like, all right, Kucherov is the passer, Point is going to shoot, Kensel's going to score a bunch of goals as well. They have worked very seamlessly, all three of them combined. Genzel's been the distributor so far, which has been very weird to see. Genzel being the one setting up Kucherov, but you know, we saw Genzel get his first in a Lightning uniform against Ottawa. I will say it did not make for a great GIF, so I would ask the broadcasters to please hold on the celebrations longer, not cut. That's just a personal preference for me, because I make GIFs of the Lightning goals. But
Dan comment, Jake's not here. No need to go in on Stamkos not starting strong. Join us if you're on YouTube. You can make sure you catch us live where we have our chat going on, where these comments are coming from. And as I replied to Dan, time is already telling. In another comment, leaving either 88 or 86 off the top three list. Well, let's go with an let's go with an honorable mention. A guy that played great in some of the games. He had a couple of blunders that I'm sure he'll be making up for throughout the season, because he did get off to a great start. And that is Vasilevskiy. Looks like in some of these games he's been absolutely back to old form, which is some of the most exciting things to watch, is when you have a hot Vasilevskiy. But for the number one star of the week, we are going with the number one goal scorer in the league, Nikita Kucherov, for your Lightning. Even if he does have a handful of empty net goals, he is still our top performing player on the Lightning. And, kind of as hinted before, this is the Nikita Kucherov three stars of the week. And he's picking up basically where he left off last season, where, you know, if we kept track of these stars, I mean, he'd be his own constellation for sure.
That's good. No, and they don't ask how, they ask how many. Yes, a couple goals have came in the empty net, but last I checked, they still count all the same. He hasn't been the so-called power play merchant he was last year. He was the reason why anybody scored on that power play last year, is because of how good he is. He's completely picked up exactly where he's left off. He's on his Hart Trophy revenge tour. I'm anticipating him to keep the goal scoring pace, throughout most, if not the entire year. Whereas, again, last year, he transitioned from the goal scorer to the pass only kind of guy. With the departure of Stamkos and with the addition of Jake Guentzel, I gotta imagine he's gonna be, hot take. Kucherov's getting 50 goals this year. I think his career high is 41 or 42, like just into the low 40s. What is it, 44?
That's what I'm seeing, 44 last season.
Okay, well, I'm going with the with a 50 bomb this year from Nikita Kucherov. That's my hot take for the episode.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, he probably could have hit that last season if he wanted to, and it seems like this season he is determined to do just that, score more, maybe make up for some of the Stamkos goals. I think that's something that you might see a lot in baseball, where if you lose a hitter, you try to add the number of hits that he would have produced with additional players, and he might be, doing that, getting more goals. But also last season, he was refusing to shoot at empty nets for long stretches of time, and this season, that doesn't seem to be the case. He's just closing games out and burying them.
To your baseball analogy, the Rays tried that this year, and it didn't work. But the Lightning are having much more success at it, so I'm very happy with that. You said 50. Our hot takes episode on the Bolt Report, Jake Ricker did say 60 for Guentzel.
Wow.
So, I don't know if that's going to happen now, because he's gotten off to a slow start, but 60 for Kucherov, he's on pace, and let's have a little bit of fun here, guys. Don't get all mad at me in the comments. For over 130 goals. Like, come on.
That's my favorite stat to do. I think I was putting it in our chat when he had three goals the first game. He was on pace for 328 on the season.
Sorry, so I was wrong. He's actually on pace for 143 and a half
goals. Yeah.
So he's still dominating. Fun. And I can't wait for this to end poorly But he's facing Toronto tonight. Toronto, very, very easily the site last year where he got booed out of the building for the All-Star game.
So you expect him to show up?
I expect him to show up. I think he's going to get at least two goals in this game.
He's a perfect villain.
He really is. He's such a villain. You know, when Kucherov does something, he's the villain. But when McKinnon does something, he's a hero.
He's God.
So I'd be more than happy to take the villain's side in this case. Nikita Kucherov remains the best player in the world, especially with a slow start from Connor McDavid. And I'm very happy that Kucherov is on my team and not any of the Atlantic teams that we have to face.
Well, I think Eureka would agree with this. Heels have more fun. And to go with what you're saying about Jake's prediction of Guentzel getting 60, that kind of would go along with this comment that Dan put in here for 50 goals and 100 points for 86 is a reasonable take. It is. That's only six additional goals from last season. That is absolutely insane to say.
Not even 50 goals and 100 points. 50 goals and 100 assists is possible for Nikita Kucherov.
Right. That was the point. 100 assists. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, it is completely in the realm of possibilities. So I think that's completely. I think it's viable. It'd be an incredible season. I won't expect it to happen to hit 100 assists in back to back years. Who knows if Gretzky or Howe or whoever the guys were on that elite list were ever able to do that. If he can do that, that'd be very impressive. But I'll be all right if
he was the only one to do it more than once.
Oh, wow. Really? Wow. Yeah. So if he could be in a category of, you know, a player, you can only share that category with Wayne Gretzky. That's pretty impressive, too. But I'll be happy if it's just, you know, if it is a 50 goal season, if it's just anything comparable to last season, even if it's not as good, even if it's a 130 point season, that is still just out of the stratosphere levels of good.
Guys, we have a team that might be able to make a deep run in the playoffs. I mean, individual achievements are amazing, but being able to win another Stanley Cup, you know, I'll take that all day long over an awards that I guess, you know, some might put, there's not going to be an awards ceremony for the NHL even this next season. They're not going to do an
awards
show.
They saw how much they bullied Kucherov last year, and they decided to back up. This is a question for the two of you. And for the audience, Nikita Kucherov already 9 points in four games. So he's got 78 games to go. And he also has 118 points to 1,000. Does he hit 1,000 this year?
How many?
He's got 118 points to go.
Easy.
78 games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. And it feels like, I know it's been a couple of years now, but really it just feels like yesterday that Stamkos hit that 1,000 point mark himself.
Wasn't
and had
that
the
last
big
year?
Ceremony.
No, that was 2 years ago.
It was 500 last year. 500 goals, right?
So I mean, he's well, it would have been he got the assists first, then the goals, but he got the
no. I think they were both
in
the
I
same
think.
Season, and were the 1,000 games. I think that was also in the same season.
That wasn't last year. Oh my god.
Yeah, I know.
At any rate, it's crazy to think that he's going to be achieving it so much more quickly, that he's that prolific of a passer, that prolific mm-hmm. of a scorer in general. But let's look at the road ahead to see who he's facing. Obviously, tonight we have in just about a half hour here, they're going against the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto, followed by a game tomorrow night, which has a pretty strange start time. And I'm not sure why this is a 6:45 start time for the New Jersey Devils tomorrow night.
Because all 32 teams are playing, all 32 teams are playing tomorrow. So they're going to do their
Frozen Frenzy.
I think I called it like the blizzard last week or something. So they're
we need a red zone. We need a red zone channel.
That's what they're doing, aren't they?
Have they
Yeah, that's essentially what this is like red zone.
Okay. Yeah.
Tonight, it doesn't matter for us necessarily, but they're playing on Amazon Prime in Canada.
Yeah.
Cool. I do like that because I like when they have it on Amazon Prime. I don't have any issues with it where the Bally's app And again, don't forget to update your Bally's app and make sure you get the new, the FanDuel app for tonight's game. But the Bally's app still crashes on me, this season. So having it on Amazon where all the big servers are is not a bad thing. Let's look further ahead, though. On Thursday, we have a 7 o'clock game against the Wild, followed by a Saturday game at 7 o'clock against the Capitals. Those are both home games. And obviously we've talked a little bit about the Toronto game that is tonight. Was there anything else that you guys are looking forward to seeing here?
This will be a tough week of hockey. All four of these teams are pretty good. Even the Wild and the Caps are both off to really good starts. In Toronto, these games are always very fun. New Jersey, they seem to also kind of have our number as well. This will be a tough week. This will be an even bigger week than the one we just had. Hopefully we can keep a hot start rolling for a lot of games on the road, or I think it's just Toronto and New Jersey, right? Regardless, just you got four games in the week. If we can come out of it with a winning record, obviously it'd be perfect if you can come out perfect, but these are all four really good teams. So if you can get some points out of it and keep the ball rolling on a hot start, I'll be very happy.
What does John Cooper usually say? And I know they're only playing two out of the four games on the road, but if you can come back from a road trip with as many or more points than you played games, it's a successful road trip. Especially early on. We talked all the time last year about them banking points early. Johansson was the starter. This year, if they can just bank points early, they can keep themselves in the divisional race. And that's more than enough. Hopefully they are continuing with their success with 5-on-5. And, I know the penalty kill will definitely bounce back and the power plays to be determined. But if we get a couple of, if they get 3 points out of the next two games on the road and then they, are successful at home, then I consider that a pretty good week.
I'm definitely inclined to agree. It should be noted that the New Jersey Devils have already played 8 games this season, winning 5 of them, having 2 losses and 1 overtime loss. So
because they played overseas.
Oh, that's right.
They started early, and they're technically, because of that, number one in the league for points, even though, again, the Lightning have only played 4 games, which is, looks like, is there anyone else with 4? I think we might have, the Capitals also have, and Hurricanes have 4 games played. So there's only a couple of teams that haven't had that many games played like we do, which, again, there's things to iron out when you've got this many fresh players. So having more games under your belt definitely gives you a little bit of an advantage. Also, Dan pointed out that Fleury is potentially going to be in net on Thursday. The only reason I really bring that up is, did you guys see his Halloween outfit?
Oh, chance? Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
For those that didn't see it, he was dressed up as McLovin from, was it Bad? Help me out, the name of the movie.
Oh, shoot. Superbad.
Superbad. And he looked spot on. I'd highly recommend that you look it up if you haven't seen it yet. Anything else you guys want to cover before we start prepping to watch a Lightning hockey game here?
We went on pretty long. I think I've expelled all my grievances this episode. Michael, you got anything?
Nope. Just hope they keep winning.
And well, put guys, the score bug back up top.
Yes.
Move the score bug. All right. Guys, this has been great. I was really looking forward to doing this episode, getting back to Lightning hockey. Looking forward again to watching tonight. Thank you, everybody that joined us. Make sure that you like, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you know when we're going live and you can join us in the chat. For Michael, Matt, and myself, thank you very much for watching. Go Bolts!
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.